You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go
downtown.
Fuck downtown. Downtown is the worst. I was going to say go see Last Night in Soho at a movie theater because it'll perk you right up.
You can go see Last Night in Soho downtown if you want.
Can you anymore?
Well, no, because the Ritz is gone, so I guess we can't.
You see it at the Violet Crown, maybe. Yeah. Where are you locals?
Yeah. Are you locals? Everyone else? What are you guys talking about?
Sorry. I went to Venom just to go to the Violet Crown because it was screening there.
At the Violet Crown, really?
It was during Fantastic Fest.
The prestige film. Venom, Let in the Carnage, or whatever that was called.
I kind of liked it, but whatever.
There's a contingent of people who did like that movie.
I didn't love it. I was like, it's like a 5 out of 10, but anyway, it doesn't matter. We're like, Last Night in Soho, which is much more interesting than either one of the Venom films. This is Edgar Wright's newest film. Edgar Wright, of course, has done a number of very high-profile films, more so, unfortunately, in Britain. It's weird because I think we've been geeks for so long for movies. Yeah, we knew about Shaun of the Dead immediately when it first played here. We went and saw it multiple times. We went and see Hot Fuzz, all that stuff. Super excited. And it always surprises me when Joe Normal is like,
who?
What?
Yeah. I forget that he's not like a box office smash here.
Yeah.
Because like all his movies have been like events for me since Shaun of the Dead. I'm like, any Edgar Wright, day one, I'm there. Like, let's fucking go.
We live in a bubble.
It's exciting.
Yeah. We live in a bubble of dorkdom.
It's always like so surprising. Like, I was like shocked that The World's End didn't hit.
Yeah.
With people.
Yeah.
I was like, what? This is amazing.
Know him here, they're just like, oh, the Baby Driver guy, right? Like,
But even then, that didn't perform super strong, right? I mean, I would say Scott Pilgrim is probably still his most recognizable.
And that came out number 3 after Expendables and Eat, Pray, Love. Right. I'm like,
But even Scott Pilgrim, that's like built a cult audience. On its release, it was kind of a bomb.
But for us, a new Edgar Wright film is always a big event. And who are the us? Well, I'm Chris, and joining me is...
Oh, right, and my last night on SoCo, am I right, fellas?
Yeah, I saw the news report at 11, so...
Yeah, I'm not doing the hottest right now, but we'll get through this.
And?
I'm Frank.
I'm Alan.
All right, well, so what sets this movie apart from a lot of the other stuff that Edgar Wright has done is that for the first time, really, and I even include his documentary, The Sparks Brothers, he's making something that's not even ostensibly a comedy. You know, everything else he's done has a very strong level of, at the very least, smirk through it. And here he's like, I'm going to make a totally straight horror film. Okay, I love totally straight horror films, and I love Edgar Wright, so I was pretty excited. And then they're like, oh, and the two female leads are being played by, I think, two of the most interesting young actresses working today. The otherworldly looking Anya Taylor-Joy, and the more recent discovery, I think, for a lot of us, Thomasin McKenzie, who I thought was the only good thing in M. Night Shyamalan's Old.
You're referencing Old and not Jojo Rabbit?
She's great in there. I was like, wait, well, I know this girl from somewhere, and watching Old, I'm going, she was literally the only thing I liked about that movie.
She was the one you gave it for the 1 out of 10.
Yeah, exactly. She's the one star for her.
Every time Old's mentioned on these podcasts, I have to mention... Sort of like Old.
Yeah, I know. You're that guy.
Dude.
But,
there are people.
I said I kind of like Venom, too, so I guess
we all have our
own. Anyway, so Thomasin McKenzie plays Eloise. When we meet her, she is living in, not in London. I'm not sure where they said she was, but some other...
Outside of London, like in a little farm town.
Very, very rural, and she wants to go to fashion school, this very... big fashion school in London. And it's established kind of early on that either A, she's crazy, or B, she can see ghosts, because she sees regularly the reflection of her mother in the mirror sort of appearing approvingly. And we're like, okay, so that means something, right? I kind of forgot about it till three quarters of the way through the movie again, because after she leaves, that's kind of the last time until the very end of the movie that you even remember or that's referenced at all. But yeah, she gets approved to the school. She goes to London. She finds that the school's filled with probably who you'd expect to see at a fashion school in the middle of London, a prestigious fashion school, which is really prissy, stuck up people.
Your roommate's named Acosta. Yeah.
Especially in the context of a horror movie when you're like the new kid coming in. Not only like do you expect them to be sort of dickish, but this is a horror movie and you need to be an outsider. So they are supreme dicks.
The stereotypes are kind of glaring in that, where I first, knowing him and loving his writing so much, that I was expecting like, oh, maybe they're a little bit more gray or actually like good. And it's just like the horror elements are the only like, you know, bad parts. But there's always that kind of thorn in the side. There's like just a piece of shit person.
But she quickly does the only right decision to do when you go off to school and you have a choice between being on dorm or finding outside housing. She finds outside housing with a lovely old lady, Miss Collins, who runs this really old tenement that she's living in, but that's moderately nice, played by the legendary Diana Rigg in her last on-screen role.
R.I.P.
You know, she was probably most famous for being the lead of the television series The Avengers, and that has nothing to do with Marvel. There was an old spy show.
Yes.
And she was kind of the height of 60s slick vinyl clad sexiness back in the day.
Yeah.
People my dad's age were always like, oh, Diana Rigg.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that was only like two seasons, wasn't it? It made such an impact.
It made a huge impact, but she went on to a big career in other films. Anyway, she's very happy about being there, but the first night she's sleeping in this room, she kind of is transported back into the 1960s London during the swinging 60s in London, where it's just glamour and fashion and beauty and great music. She's kind of in the body of another person, Anya Taylor-Joy, who's Sandy, who's a young ingenue singer who is aggressively trying to let herself be known by showing up at these fancy nightclubs. But she's also, sometimes we see her standing kind of outside, like we see her in like in mirrors sort of watching. She follows this and wakes up and is like, oh my God, I'm so inspired. And she just starts, because all these beautiful clothes, and they really are beautiful, she starts doing designs in school, and they're like, wow, you're onto something here. So she's like, every night, she's like, I can't wait to get to sleep, because I want to see more of this world I keep going back to. And in that world, Anya Taylor-Joy ends up meeting Jack, played by Doctor Who, Matt Smith, who is a slick, handsome, although I always thought he was weird looking, but
he is weird looking.
But people think he's really handsome.
I mean,
so.
It's like that Adam Driver, like interestingly handsome.
He's interestingly handsome, I suppose.
Adam Driver's not interestingly handsome.
Well, so a lot of people feel that way, though. A lot of people do feel that way. I'm not one of them, but you know, I will say his hair is spectacular.
He has great hair.
He's the best hair.
And that body, oof.
Yeah. My God, what podcast am I on?
Watching that.
Matt Smith hair.
Slowly just turns into making sex noises. Yeah. Adam Driver.
That was Adam Driver. Matt Smith's hair is just fine. I don't know. There's nothing special about it.
Yeah. I think both of those guys' hair is great.
Adam Driver's not in this movie, though. Matt Smith is. Playing the guy, he's like, come with me, baby, and I'll make you a star. And so, if you knew nothing at all about the history of band and artist management, you'd probably be like, yeah, this is great.
Yeah.
They're going to fall in love, and everything's going to be perfect. But if you do know a lot about that period of time and how incredibly manipulative and misogynist that these people were treated, often a lot of stars were like, yeah, I basically was told you have to sleep with these people if you want to get a record deal, end of story. That's the world she finds herself in. Quickly, the dreams that Eloise is having at night that start off as beautiful, lovely things turn into like horrible nightmares as Jack gets more and more dangerous, especially when Sandy says, you know, I don't want to do this. I want to get out of here. And, you know, he's like, no, you can't. You belong to me now. Which is when the movie goes from this real fetishistic almost appreciation of swinging 60s London to like a straight up horror movie. And it does in fact get scary for Thomasin McKenzie, especially because the dreams start working their way into her real life as she starts seeing these things and these people and sort of shadowy, weird, transforming creatures appearing everywhere in London.
Those phantoms, let's say, are ghosts in
phantoms
a lot of ways.
Phantoms is a good way to, like,
phantoms are the bomb, yo.
that was like one of the best, like, representations of a ghost, and not like cheesy or too over the top, like CGI or something like that, in a very long time. Because it actually reminded me more of like sleep paralysis, where it's like yes. you almost sort of see the faces and the figures, but you can't make it out 100%. Yeah. Yeah. And it's so much more frightening when you can't look at the face in the eyes.
And that's so apt. That's so true. I was trying throughout the screen to look at their faces, and there are like little like features that do like signify that they are human. Yeah. Mask, yeah, but they're yeah. but they're so interchangeable. You can't pinpoint any feature for, you know, really what it is. And that's brilliant, because it is just a parade of men that are these disgusting trolls.
It so also great. Speaks to like a design choice, which I really like, is modern horror, like Malignant, Conjuring, all that series. There's an instinct to go like really extreme
yeah.
with the scare. Like yeah. the ghost is like fucking scary looking and everything like that. And this is harkening back to like more of like the 60s, 70s ghost stories, where it's just like the idea that a ghost exists is scary. And this is like the middle ground of that, where like the design is scary to look at, but it's not extreme.
Yeah.
It's scary, but it's not.
It's captivating, but
yeah.
It's,
yeah. It doesn't need sharp teeth. It doesn't Absolutely. Need, like, you know, it's interesting.
Despite that this is a ghost story, although it's kind of a weirdly reverse ghost story, because she's kind of haunting the past in
yeah,
a way.
Yeah.
But
brilliant.
Oh. It's not really going openly for being super scary, other than confronting straight up misogyny, which is very still applicable today, obviously. And you really, really get worried for Anya Taylor-Joy's character. Now, the third act of this film definitely takes a turn into a very familiar structural element of the ghost mystery type story, as in its own way, it does the let's go to the library and look through microfiche, but it doesn't do that specifically, but you know, it's that sort of thing. Normally I would go like, here we go, but I was so swept up in Edgar Wright's incredible cinematography on this film. Just gorgeous visuals, sets. There's a great story that he was telling about working with Diana Rigg, who was only present in the modern day sequences. They took her to one of those nightclub sets when they had the band playing and all the people there. And she apparently just started crying and was like, this is like, I'm just 20 years old again. This is exactly what it was like. And you know, this is her last movie. It's like a last present he could do for this legend.
It's really great. The amount of detail that he goes into, you were transferred back there and just like seeing the spots and the amount of detail that he goes into. And it's still like subtle in a lot of ways too. Like I didn't think that it was like too overwrought with just like being too flash or anything, which is kind of like what Edgar Wright normally does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's funny. You think of Edgar Wright's style, like in my head, I was thinking of like organized chaos in the editing.
Yeah.
Like every action a character does, just a camera, it's like, and that's not present in this movie at all. But his style's still there. It's just...
He's evolving.
He knew what he really wanted to shoot. And I think the way he just romanticized 1960s London, it's just candy. It really is. And it is so dreamy and gets swept up. And when the turn happens, it's really sort of like punctuated with this long tracking shot where Eloise is following Sandy. And it just becomes this labyrinth of horror. And the beauty and the lushness of it is just stripped away. And it becomes this madhouse. And God, that was so brilliant. I'm just like, I'm in there right now.
Yeah, that's why like the... conventional structure of it, like a ghost story, like it's kind of a thing he's always done. Like Shaun of the Dead is a zombie movie, like structurally it's just like any other zombie movie, almost. It's just through a comedic lens or Hot Fuzz, whatever he does. He doesn't really change the game on the genre he's in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is definitely his straightest film, because there's no tongue in the cheek with this one at all.
I feel like instead of changing it with comedy, or even like Baby Driver had structural changes, but to a familiar structure, this time he's changing it with just the lush nostalgia, you know, and the way he shoots it.
The directing style, and there is like a slight different angle on the ghost story, like in the third act, that kind of changes the idea of nostalgia and ghosts and hauntings and all that in general.
Yeah.
Which is the smart part, but the structure is the same. The camera tricks and the crazy directing, like when she's in her body and not in her body, and there's some sequences where they're like interchanging in the dance and then
that was brilliant.
All done practically.
And he said he said it was like 90% practical. Yeah. Me and Chris saw it at Fantastic Fest, and he's there and he's talked about like so much of his done with just the both of them in and out of the camera, certain reflections of the mirror, like mirror on a mirror on a mirror.
It had to be so perfectly blocked. The dance scene you're talking about, where like Matt Smith is dancing with Sandy and Anya Taylor-Joy in the middle of a big crowded dance hall, and the camera's just whirling around them, back when people used to actually dance properly with couples.
Back in your day.
Yeah,
when you were like, in your 60s at the time.
I was in my 60s or 70s then. Yeah. But he manages to switch out the actresses, and there's no CG, and to be honest, it had to be blocked down to the microsecond for it to work, because the camera never stops moving. And like literally there'll be a second when one of them is not on screen and then the other one comes into screen. You're like, Jesus Christ.
It's fun. It's besides his editing. It's like the in-camera editing that he's doing. Yeah. And it's, I guess, from our standpoint, being just film geeks, watching that and just marveling in the technique of actually getting it done and making it work. Because there's even like one time, like, that's when they pushed her out of the way to get the other actress in. It was like, but it's still great because you could see them reveling in the blocking of all.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the trick. It's like a... Like, a little trick, yeah. Can we pull this trick off? And like, it's very hard to do. And that's where like his meticulousness and like, in his other movies is done in editing, yeah, and story beats. I remember on the Shaun of the Dead, like special features, they do a storyboard, him inside Pegasus, and it's like the exact movie with shots that they did like a year before they shot. Like that level of meticulousness is still there. So like his style and like how he makes films, it's still very much on display
and
in this
movie. I feel like every choice he makes storyline wise also is like, there's no fat to spare. And there he is one of those people. Often in these type of movies, there are a lot of red herrings, but they don't really come to anything. They're just red herrings, like in any given mystery. And here, when he plays with his red herrings, he knows exactly how to set it up in the time, the chronology of the film, when they should be revealed, what is revealed by them being revealed. You know, one thing leads to another to another. And so you as an audience member, I mean, you don't even realize there really is a mystery at first. Thomas and Mackenzie wants to find a way to save this girl who, you know, how could she possibly? This is like decades beforehand and not even 100% sure any of it's even real, right?
Yeah,
but
right.
Then as it goes along, as she starts to realize, like, there are questions. What happened to her in real life? It, like, she starts to believe this all really happened. So who are these people? And starts thinking that maybe she's seeing the older Jack somewhere and wants to confront him. And that's when this movie really swings into that third act gear of like, okay, now we're straight up, like, she's a detective and she's got to solve this shit. I did not see the ending coming. You're like, she has two decisions to make here about how to go about this. And she makes the one I did not see coming either, that kind of rescues the film. A film discussing misogyny on this level has some hard choices to make. And even that ending, which ends up going, okay, yeah, we are on the right side of this 100%, is a hard choice to make in the story.
No, yeah, that's, it was like I kind of did see what the reveal was going to be. Like, as the third act started going, I was like, okay, this is what's going to happen. The moment I kind of like thought, okay, if that's what happens, like, how are they going to reconcile what we've seen so
that's
far?
That's what's with so that? Interesting about
and
it, yeah.
When they, how, the way they pull it off, it's like so well done. And so, like, it's like a trick. It's like a tight wire. Like, how do you set up all these dominoes and then reveal, like, oh, they're not actually falling that way, but how are they going to fall now? Like, nailing it is tricky, and they do it. I think it's great.
It's a sympathy for a ghost of the past, for, like, her being in that world in her dreams for, you know, ever since she got to London, and then trying to not just give up on it like any other horror movie would have, just like, oh, this just... They're all bad. Like, all everything from the past is bad.
Too easy.
And they don't make it an easy choice. And I think it was wonderful the way that they approached it. Let's just say, like, evil can be sympathized in some ways.
And let's not forget, important time to remind people, just because you're able to figure out ahead of time what the twist is in a movie doesn't mean the movie is bad.
This is a very important thing to remember. I mean, I think that the reason it works at the end is because this bond that she's established, that's what I was really, like, so hit with, like, I was surprised to be hit with, was this emotional bond between her and Sandy. You know, they never acknowledge each other. They don't have any actual connection, but
they do have actual physical contact in one scene of
the
film.
Yeah, they do. That's true. But I think that this kinship that she's developed with this ghost from the past, it's that emotional through line. That's the secret weapon in the finale for me. How do you justify what's happened at the same time you understand why everything that's led up to this point? And it all works.
God, it's so hard to talk about this thing.
It
really is. But let's go to final thoughts. Alan, why don't you get us started?
I love this movie quite a bit. I'm excited to see it again. Like, I think I went through almost all the details I can go through. And I do want to reiterate what Chris is saying, just because I figured out what the ending was going to be. Like, on paper, it doesn't mean I knew how it was going to land thematically or emotionally. That's the stuff that we love movies for. Like, if you're watching a genre movie, you sort of know what's going to happen.
Well, you memorize the conventions
going you know, in. and as it was going, it's like, okay, this is how this is going to play out on paper, like A to B to C. But, like, what's going to happen when they land on that ending? And how are they going to play it? Oh. And I didn't know how that was going to happen. I knew the reveal maybe, but I didn't know how they're going to make it good or like what they're going to do with that. And it blew me away. I'm going to give like one short of perfect, I think. Some bits that are a little shabby here and there, I guess, but it's like picking nits really. So 9 out of 10 James Bond marquees.
Frank?
I was telling Wright, I'm going to go to the next screening because I want... The Wright that's usually wrong. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
The Wright
Two Wrights do make a
right. The Wright on his left.
That was a cheap shot. I'm sorry. No, I was telling him after the screening, I'm going to go again to this next press screening just because I want to see it again. I'm a little too close to it because I went to study in London in 2007. I ended up living there for a few years. So I went to her library, that Pizza Express that's near her bar. I ate at that Pizza Express. I was in Soho like more times than I can count. That world is so palpable. And I was surprised because Edgar Wright makes movies for, and I include myself in this group, for the man child. But to go into this movie and find that he made something that was for grown-ups, for lack of a better term, but it was about something. It had meaning. It was telling. There's a little bit of a tragedy in there as well. There's also a real poignancy. And the end just made me cry. Everything about this was great. It's inventive. It's novel. It's beautiful. It's emotional. I can't really find anything here that I would have changed. And, you know, we always find something we want to kind of change. I was kind of upset that this was Diana Rigg's last movie because you never want to see a legend go. But what a great way to go out in this kind of a project. I am going to give this 10 out of 10. Versions of Downtown by Emma Bunton. Guys, go look up Emma Bunton's version of Downtown because it's really, really fun. And I do it at karaoke sometimes.
Color me unsurprised. Right?
When I walked out of the theater with Frank, I initially wasn't as thrilled as I am now thinking about it.
I sold you on it. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I mean, you kind of did. I mean, we started talking about it more and then thinking about it over the last couple of days, I've grown to appreciate and love it even more. And I think the initial response was that, I mean, I guess this is really only for the people who are film geeks that actually have been following Edgar Wright since Shaun of the Dead and even in Spaced, where this is different than anything he's done before. And that's a good thing. And he did it well. Like, he's evolving as a filmmaker and as a storyteller, but it's still all there. All the elements are there. Like, you won't feel like you're watching someone else's movie. Thinking about it more and more, I was like, I really did just love the way that he told the story, how I haven't seen really a movie like this in a long time where you truly do sympathize with the, let's say, evil in the story when it is actually, like, revealed what kind of evil it is. The performances in it are great. Like, Anya Taylor-Joy is crazy, gorgeous, just mesmerizing to watch. And Thomas and McKenzie, I cannot wait to see what else she does. I did not see Old, so I haven't tarnished my viewing of her just yet. So
she's great in it, even Christmas.
Yeah, maybe they'll put someone will put together the Thomas and McKenzie cut that it's just her scenes, and then you can watch that.
And Matt Smith is great as like just a piece of shit kind of guy, and Diana Rigg is fantastic. I thought she was going to be kind of written off as a more of a side little character, like more in like Hot Fuzz or something like that, but she has a very prominent role, and I'm glad that they like used her up as much as they did. Now I really can't stop thinking about it, and I really did love it. So in the end, I will give it 9 out of 10 Vespers that I probably had last night. So
I think the magic trick of this movie is the way that everything is so circular inside of it. It's just filled with detail. There's so much on so many different levels, whether it's the fashion or even things like what movies are playing on marquees are like little subtle nods to maybe something that is inherent in the plot later on. But the best thing that he did that I was like, that is so clever. So there's obviously a lot of 60s music in it. And most of the songs he picks are songs that you know the later versions of, you know the modern versions of, and you didn't realize they were covers of 60s songs, which I thought was this neat sort of, oh, well, this is a movie about these two different time periods and the sort of appreciation of the past. And I was like, wow, like all that is there within this little gem of a film. You know, that's why I want to see it again. I just want to go and pick out all the details. I'd be like, yeah, the plot, whatever. I know what happens now. I'm looking in the background to see if I missed something. Because it just never stops being colorful. And you just luxuriate. And even the modern day stuff is shot in a way that you're like, man, Edgar Wright is really good at what he does. I just never knew he could be this kind of director.
Yeah.
And he can. Mm-hmm. And of course, as I always say, every time I see an Edgar Wright film, I can't wait to see the next Edgar Wright film. Yeah, I think at worst, this is never really scary, other than, like I said, you're scared for people on a relatable human level. It's not scary in the more traditional horror movie sense. And I think that surprised some people as they were expecting a ghost story to be spooky. And it's not really a spooky ghost story. I really need my wife to see this movie because she fixates on 60s fashion and 60s culture. Mad Men's like one of her favorite TV shows. I was like, imagine Mad Men the horror movie.
Is it Mad Men already a horror movie?
Yeah,
show?
I mean, kind of. Yeah. But I am going to give this 9 out of 10 times that after Frank told his little story about sleep paralysis, I thought, are we sure Anya Taylor-Joy is a human being and not an alien from another galaxy?
I'm not sure about
Are we sure? Because, like, and why isn't she played need that yet. Because the first thing you think when you see her in those crazy eyes, like, I know Hollywood is breeding young actresses now to have bigger and bigger eyes. I mean, they'll do it with CG if they have to these days. But, like, you're like, wow. And I'm like, she's like the perfect human alien hybrid they finally come up with. That's like beautiful and ostensibly human, but you can tell something's a little
otherworldly. Is like a perfect description. Otherworldly, yeah. And she's so fucking good in everything, too.
Oh, yeah. The Queen's Gambit was one of the strongest things that came out in television at any time recently, and it's because she's amazing and carries that fucking...
And she can sing.
Thoroughbreds, that comedy thriller she did.
Terrific.
She's so good.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, but watch this first.
Yeah.